Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Ryan, veterinary behavior residency trained and a veterinarian.
And I'm Dr. Serena. I'm also a veterinarian and currently pursuing my veterinary behavior residency. So the last topic, we were chatting about separation anxiety, and we were talking about the differential diagnoses of separation anxiety. So I think you wanted to talk about our approach to a case because it's a very common problem for dog parents.
Yeah. So it's very, very easy to blame separation-related disorders or separation anxiety in the old term terminology. It's very easy to blame that as an excuse, or use that as an excuse for the dog's behavior when the owners are away. But because of what we know and our experience, we don't always jump to the conclusion that this is it. And we discussed it and kind of like touched it a little bit in the last episode. And if you're interested, there's going to be a link below, or, you know, just see the previous one. But for example, a person that's telling you that the dog is actually eating normally, or maybe even eating more than the usual, might not always be that. It might, by the way. Some kind of like in people might actually, anxiety will cause them to overeat. But for separation anxiety, it's kind of like, I would say, the outlier. It's usually not the case. So I will start. We can talk about like how we diagnose the thing or that specific behavior. But I will say that the tool that I use the most, and I think is probably the best way to diagnose separation anxiety or anything like that, is a camera. Do you agree with me?
Yes, of course.
So nowadays, and it's, I mean, it sounds so stupid maybe, but it's so important nowadays. And it's very easy because you can buy those cameras that have either a subscription program, but some of them you don't even need to have any subscriptions or anything like that. I have something called Waze. It's Waze. It's, if I remember correctly, you don't really need to have the subscription, and it will give you alerts when the dog is barking or when the dog is moving around, and you can even set up like a specific perimeter in the picture. So, you know, if your dog is just moving around the bed and you don't mind, or you don't think it has anything to do with the dog's behavior, you can kind of like leave that out and only put the door next to the dog or whatever, that it will send you alerts. And then you can either watch the recording. So that camera definitely has an SD, a micro SD card that you can put inside, and then review the videos later, even if you might not be able to review it live, because let's be honest, most people don't really have the time to sit and look at their phone and see what their dog is doing. So having something that actually records the dog is very, very convenient, very easy. And what I ask the owners to do at the beginning, so we can actually get to the diagnosis, but even later on for the treatment, is to create like an Excel sheet or some sort of a journal and write what the dog was doing. And like saying that between this and this time, the dog was barking. Between this and this, the dog was sleeping. Between this and this, the dog was drooling. Or, you know, everything basically that you can think of, because that can help us diagnose. You'll be surprised of the times that people thought their dog had separation anxiety, and once they started recording the dog when he's alone, they found out that he was actually responding to barks from the outside. Mm. And it wasn't separation anxiety. It was frustration or boredom or even like a playful behavior.
Yeah. Or like normal territorial behavior. If he's exactly. hearing a dog, another dog outside of his
yes.
his territory. Mm-hmm. But yes, absolutely getting a camera. So recently I had a client who basically said, my dog has separation anxiety, same as the Reddit post that you had shared with us. My dog has separation anxiety. They filmed right before leaving. And then I said, what does he do when you're actually gone? Oh, he sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's necessarily separation related disorder that we're dealing with. And it might be frustration. Maybe he has FOMO. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. No, even with my own dogs, I mean, one of them now actually does have separation anxiety, but a long time ago, we had a neighbor complaining that he's barking all day long. And it was true that when we were leaving, we would hear him bark. And when we would come back, we would hear him bark. But we didn't know what happened in between, in those few hours that were, you know, in between. So, yeah. And you have someone coming and telling you that the dog is barking nonstop, and you kind of believe them. But I didn't. So I used the camera, and I actually found out that he would bark like 15 minutes at the beginning, 15 minutes, not 15 minutes, like only when he heard us coming back, or if someone was, you know, like actively getting to the door and, you know, like making noise in the hallway or something like that, which mm-hmm. is also a normal behavior. You mentioned territorial behavior. That's another reason why people have dogs, to defend their house, to protect the house, to be territorial. And, yeah. you know, we can't complain when the dog is being territorial. It sounds like Cola agrees, right?
Hey, you, Cola. that was my fear was contributing to a dog that was going to have separation anxiety. But she's been in her X pen for an hour and a half or 2 hours now, so
yeah, she's getting
she just woke up from her nap, so I'm actually just gonna let her outside.
Sure. While you're doing it, I'll say that the next thing that I usually look for are those, you know, different behaviors that we also mentioned the last episode that we made, kind of like the destructive behaviors or the house soiling only when the dog is alone, but not in different situations. I would like to kind of like make sure that there aren't any loud noises or outside triggers, because, for example, it is very common that a dog with noise phobia will also have separation anxiety and vice versa. So I always try to also rule out those things and make sure there aren't any other triggers causing it as well, to kind of like get to a conclusion that we are talking about separation anxiety. What other behaviors or other things would you look for to kind of like get to a diagnosis of separation related behaviors?
So the lack of sleep, if they aren't sleeping, which I touched on in the previous video. If there's a lot of drooling, pacing, panting, if there's a lot of destruction or clawing at the exit of where the humans were versus other areas of the house. Because if you're having destruction at the exit, that could be more common with a separation related problem. Not eating, which you already mentioned, it's very, very common for dogs who have anxiety to not eat. Or if they're fearful or in panic, they won't eat. And that has to do with the increase in the sympathetic tone versus the parasympathetic tone. The parasympathetic mm-hmm. being our rest and digest, the sympathetic being our fight or flight. So if that parasympathetic nervous system isn't turned on, you're going to have less sleep, you're going to have less rest, you're going to have less eating. So that would be my kind of like expectation for dogs who have the diagnosis of a separation related disorder.
Yeah, and you basically said both things, but I'm kind of like wanna put an emphasis on it to kind of like, not intentionally, but to show how confusing it can be that a dog with separation anxiety can be very active. And as you said, like would roam around the house and will not sleep, would not be able to rest or relax even for a second. But on the other side of the scale, they still wouldn't be able to sleep and rest, but they will lay down and would freeze basically and stare at the door and not move the entire time other than like holding their head up from time to time, or you know, you could see their ears moving towards the door, towards different sounds and stuff like that. And that's another reason why videos are very good in order to get to a diagnosis and even later for the treatment, because some people would say, okay, my dog doesn't have separation anxiety because he's not active and he's not barking, but you see that the dog spends those, I don't know, 4-6 hours awake staring at the dog in the door and not doing anything other than staring, then that's not normal. That's
not normal. Maybe more
acceptable to most people because the dog is not causing damage or not causing the neighbors to complain, but it's definitely not a normal thing.
Separation related disorders are often comorbid with other disorders. So you mentioned noise sensitivity as being one of them. So when we have a behavior case that even if they're not presenting for separation related disorder, they're presenting for leash reactivity or something like that, I still want a video of the departures. Because if that dog is not sleeping well, the walk in the evening will be worse. And the pet parent might not be able to identify it without taking a video.
So let's say that we did get to a diagnosis and it is a separation related behavior. What would be your first recommendation as for treatment?
My first recommendation is building some sort of safe place for them. It doesn't necessarily need to be a crate, and we touched on this before, it's individual dependent, but usually a bedroom, usually a bedroom with a crate if they do well in a crate. If there's multiple dogs in the house, if they do better with one dog than being alone, then I try to get the pet parents to train both dogs at the same time. But there might be one that's more disruptive, or maybe one that can't handle being in the bedroom alone, then I ask them to train them separately. So some sort of safe place. Some dogs like to sleep in the closet. There's no reason why we can't have them in there.
Would you recommend, sorry for cutting you off, would you recommend like adopting another dog in order to?
No.
So good. Oh, I'm asking because I know that it's a question that many people ask us. I know that it's something that sadly many people, including veterinarians, do recommend, like bring another dog so that your dog will have a friend and then they're not feeling that they're separated.
Yeah, so it has to do with the fact that that dog is being separated from its attachment figure, and you can't expect the dog to have the same attachment with a new dog that comes in. If you're lucky, they're going to get along really great. If you're, you know, so-so, they're going to be tolerant of each other. But what if you have now two dogs that don't get along and now you have to manage two dogs? So, which has actually happened with one of my cases, a dog who had all sorts of behavior issues, and they thought, I'm going to get a dog for this dog. And then he started attacking the new dog. And so now they had a whole new problem that they weren't dealing with when he was the only dog in the house.
Yeah, no, that's I completely agree. And not to mention, you know, someone having the, I mean, being very, very unlucky and getting two dogs with separation related behaviors or disorders, and now he has to deal with two dogs with separation anxiety instead of just the one. Yeah, no. So yeah, I completely agree. Bringing another dog is definitely not something I recommend. I will say that in my case, and I don't know, maybe it's because of the cases that I mostly see, and you know, we usually see the more complicated cases, right? I mean, because if it's not too bad, then usually it will be solved even before they come to see us. We're usually getting the really bad ones.
Yeah.
And in my experience, most of the patients that I got sadly didn't respond to just, you know, routine and working on, you know, counter conditioning and desensitization to living or even to being alone. So, you know, there many times you would hear like recommendations or suggestions on like, and leave the house for like a second and come back, and then 2 seconds and come back, and so on, which might take forever, basically. In my experience, it never works. Not rarely, never. I never saw a dog that got better. And again, maybe because the dogs that I'm seeing are usually a lot harder, but I never saw that any of them responded well to things like that. And that's why we actually use quite a lot of anti-anxiety medications to actually help the dog reduce the anxiety. And then we're able to do things like that. But, you know, not before. What do you think?
Yeah. I agree. If it is so severe that it's affecting the human's quality of life and the dog's quality of life, because it's a pair that probably is both suffering from anxiety, because there's pet parents that just, they feel guilty for leaving their dog, and then they can't, they basically rearrange their entire life for their dog. Mm-hmm. So I start them on an as needed medication. So medication they give prior to departures, and a daily anti-anxiety medication. Mm-hmm. So the as-needed medication might be a sedative, but my goal is for them to sleep when the pet parent isn't there. There's no reason that they need to be awake. Mm-hmm. So
you usually start with both? You usually start with both the daily medication and the as-needed? Or do you like try, let's say, the as-needed, the fast-acting medication first and see if it's effective, and only then decide if you want to add?
Because if the goal is to train them, my as-needed medications are hypnotics or sedatives. And so if I'm giving them an as-needed medication that's going to sedate them, they can't be trained when they're sleeping. Mm-hmm. So I want to start a daily anxiolytic so that in 6 to 8 weeks, we can actually start the training. But I need a calmer dog first before the training.
Got it. So if I give them like acepromazine?
I actually don't use acepromazine.
So what hypnotics do you use?
So I use trazodone or a benzodiazepine, depending on the dog. Mm-hmm. I have also used clonidine.
Okay. No, good. It's important to know, because there's a big difference. All of those do have and they're not just sedatives. They're actually also, you know, affect serotonin or affect GABA or all kinds of, you know, other systems in the brain. And that's usually kind of like how I promote them. like I say, look, this is not just the set. It might also cause sedation, which is not the end of the world for a dog that's, you know, staying alone, but they will also reduce the anxiety, hopefully. And then again, kind of like making things easier. Unlike ACE Promazine that I mentioned, that doesn't have anti-anxiety properties. It will knock the dog out. ACE
Promazine is a tranquilizer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't use ACE Promazine. But I think none
of us do anymore, or almost never use them.
I think there probably are scenarios where you might use it. Isn't the chill protocol ACE Promazine, melatonin kind of stuff? Like,
yeah, but I think
I don't use the treat
like chill protocol. Dexametatomidine or something. So it's kind of like a combination. It never comes just the ACE like it used to come in the past, because that was like the drug that everyone used, I don't know, like 20 years ago, and said this still some use it even nowadays, because it might cause the dog to look like he's calmer, but it's not really causing him to be calmer. It's, as you mentioned, it's kind of like knocking him out. But the problem is that when other veterinarians ask me about using this medication, I say it's probably like being like having a really bad trip. It's like everything is weird. Probably you don't know what's going on. But we do know that those dogs, if the trigger is strong enough, they will still have a reaction. So, for example, using that without giving them something for anxiety, and if you use that for example, aggression, it might be dangerous. You might actually get bitten because the dog is kind of like out of it. All of a sudden, he bites you.
Yeah, but the same can be said with trazodone as well. Mm-hmm. So if most of us have gone through the psychopharmacology book by Stahl.
Yeah.
Where trazodone is used for insomnia in people. And so it first binds antihistamine, or is an antihistamine first. And so if you take a Benadryl, you're going to be sleepy. You shouldn't be driving. And then later, it's very weak serotonin reuptake inhibition.
But that also depends on the dosage, right? Because the lower dosages affect specific receptors, and the higher dosages will have the more effect on the anxiety as well. And that's why that's also true. That's like for behavior, I usually don't use the same dosages as someone will use post-surgery. I will actually use the higher dosages.
So that you actually get the serotonin reuptake inhibition, increase in serotonin, decrease.
Yeah, because I care more about the anxiety relieving properties and less the sedation.
The cage race. Yeah, bonus. Rest, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, benzodiazepines like Xanax and clonazepam and clonazepate and all of those, they can be great options because, kind of like in people, they also help a lot with anxiety and stuff like that. But on the other hand, one of the side effects would be increased appetite. So we mentioned in the last episode, the dog that would actually eat or scavenge around the house trying to look for food, or pica and stuff like that, the benzodiazepines, you need to know that this can be a side effect. And then you give your dog a Xanax, he might actually start eating everything and destroying the house because he feels like he's hungry. And it's not because he's anxious anymore, but because of the side effect of the medication.
Yeah. So you have to be very selective with benzodiazepines. And I'm not sure if you have that sort of thought as well, as also not just selective about the dogs that you prescribe benzodiazepines to, but also the pet parent, because of benzodiazepines in humans. But there would be a select few that we might benefit from. So the ones that are like frozen and don't want to eat when their humans are gone. non-aggressive patients, because benzodiazepines can be contraindicative for aggression. Mm-hmm. But there's also that side effect of paradoxical excitation, right, where now you have a dog who's more amped up.
Yeah.
When you want the dog to be sleeping.
That's true. That's true. That's why you should probably not just medicate your dog with the medications that we were kind of like describing today or saying are options, but actually do get some recommendations from a veterinarian or even veterinary behaviorist, because we kind of know exactly what to warn you from. And we, I guess we would have better ways or more experience in selecting the right medications to the right dogs and the right pet owner.
Yeah.
Because of the state where I live in, using medications that are control substances like the benzodiazepines, it's really hard. It's really hard to kind of like use them or refill them, because the owners actually need to get a paper script from me, and we can do it with refills. So every single month they need to come for a new script. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't think I used it too much in the past 3 years, probably. But before that, when I was still in Indiana, it's easier, because then you can just pick up the phone, call the pharmacy, and ask for the medication with the refills, even if it is a controlled substance. At least that's how it was a few years ago. I don't know if it's still the same right now, but right. You know, it was easy. But let's talk about the daily medications. So we do actually have two medications that are FDA approved for that specific problem, for the separation anxiety.
Yeah.
One is the fluoxetine or Prozac, which the brand that is approved is called the Reconcile. Reconcile, I don't know, everyone pronounces it differently. And the other one is clomipramine, or the actual brand that's called Clomicon. These are two different families of medications. The Clomicon is a tricyclic antidepressant, and the Reconcile is an SSRI. It's serotonin selective reuptake inhibitor. They both affect serotonin, and actually they both affect other things as well. But because these two medications are actually labeled for separation anxiety, I think that in my case, and I wouldn't be surprised that many others do the same, these are probably the go-to medications before I start using off-label medications. Is that the same with you?
Yeah, for sure. So whether I'm prescribing Reconcile or Clomicalm, or reaching for the human generic, does end up being the cost and size of the tablets or capsules. That being said, there's been a little bit of research that Reconcile itself is more bioavailable in the dog than it is with like the human generic.
Yeah.
And that each human generic, you can have different effects. So APO versus TEVA. You might, like, if you go to a different pharmacy and you end up with a different generic and you see a completely different effect or no effect, or maybe it was, they were doing really well and they were stable and then you switched generic. Just sort of keeping that in mind as well for those pet parents who are using fluoxetine, Prozac, generic Prozac, whatever you're using out there. So that Reconcile is actually considered better, and that's why it's dosed. Like, for instance, you have an 8 milligram would be the equivalent as a 10 milligram of the generic.
Yeah. And they make it like a treat, so you don't have, hopefully don't have to fight the dog over giving him the medication. Now, I usually start with the fluoxetine, with the Reconcile, because in most cases you can use it as a once a day medication, unlike many of the other medications that we might need to use twice a day or even three times a day sometimes.
It's also what the medication that's had the most research. Fluoxetine in general is like what, the 1970s. So we have a ton of research on using fluoxetine versus any of the other SSRIs or using any of the TCAs. The only time that I might reach for clomipramine or Clomicalm first is if my patient gets stress-induced colitis because of the acetylcholine binding that I can get with a TCA that is not in the fluoxetine. So that would be the only kind of case where I'm like, your dog has diarrhea every time you leave the house. Those are the ones where I'm like using one of the side effects of a medication for an appropriate effect.
Now, people need to understand that, let me tell it in a way of a quick story of something that happened to me. So again, usually it happens when I'm doing like the general practice work, not when I'm doing the behavior stuff. So someone, a client came over and he said something like that he feels like all I'm doing is doing the physical exam, taking the history and looking at the previous records, and then guessing what the problem the dog has and kind of like what the treatment should be. So yeah, that's actually exactly what I'm doing. That's educated guess, and that's medicine. We take history, we do a physical exam, but many times, we don't MRI or CT every single dog that walks into the room. We don't do millions of different tests that are probably not necessary in every single dog. So many times we are not sure what the diagnosis is, but we can do those educated guesses from all the information that we have. And then the treatment, some conditions might have different medications that we can use. So especially like behavior issues, we have different families. Each family has different medications in it. So let's say you tried the fluoxetine, the Reconcile, and it caused the dog to have GI issues, gastrointestinal issues. You tried the clomipramine, the dog still had GI issues. Then maybe you want to try escitalopram, or maybe you want to try paroxetine that are also an SSRI, but they're not exactly the same, so they might actually have a different effect.
Yeah,
So
for sure.
yes, we are guessing many times, educated guesses. It's not the same as just randomly throwing something at the dog, hoping that it will do something, because then you don't need to pay us all that money. But yeah, there is some amount of guessing, and there's a lot of trial and error. In behavior, there's tons of trial and error.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say that in behavior, more so than any other discipline in veterinary medicine, is the tri this trial and error. Maybe the other equivalent is rehab, like physical rehab, because they might be trying meloxicam and get GI upset, and they're trying to find an appropriate pain control for their osteoarthritic dogs.
No, I think it's harder for us. For our patients and for our it's definitely harder.
I think it's probably harder, but one thing that I wanted to touch on as well while we're talking about SSRIs is that how do you feel when we're using fluoxetine and trazodone together? Are you concerned about serotonin syndrome?
Yeah, so serotonin syndrome is caused by too much serotonin in the body. So usually we use the medications that increase serotonin. I mean, if you're doing it on purpose, because actually there are other medications that might increase serotonin, but we're using them for like a whole different reason or something like that. So, you know, you always want your veterinarian to know that your dog is on a behavioral treatment so they can make sure there are no contraindications with the other medications. But yeah, so both fluoxetine or Reconcile and actually clomipramine and trazodone, they all increase serotonin, not exactly in the same mechanism, but the result is more serotonin in the brain. The serotonin is one of the neurotransmitters in the brain, and in dogs with and people with behavioral issues, there might be either low levels of serotonin or the receptors don't respond the same. We actually don't really know for sure. There are like different theories on on why it's
effective. They don't know in people too. So
yeah. No,
this for those of you out there who are like, exactly. Oh, you guys don't know what you're doing. It's that they don't. These receptors are so small, and there's so many different receptors that I don't even think that they have identified all of the serotonin receptors in their brain.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like probably 50 more than the ones they already know. But yeah, even in like install in the psychopharmacology book that people basically use, they say that there are like different theories on why there are issues and why increasing the serotonin might help, but we don't know. But basically that's what we do. We try to increase the serotonin and like have effect on the receptors and all of that. The serotonin syndrome will happen if we have too much serotonin, and that makes people kind of like think, more should we use more than one medication that increases the serotonin in the body or in the brain and the body? And the answer is yes. I would definitely use trazodone and Reconcile or fluoxetine at the same time. I will change the dosage that I will use. So for example, if I use trazodone by itself, I will easily go up to, let's say, 10, 12, in some situations, even more than that, a milligram per kilogram. But when I'm using it in combination with fluoxetine, then I would probably limit myself and I wouldn't go over 8 milligram per kilogram.
Yeah, I'm similar. I usually start at the lower end around 5 mg per kg for trazodone and then increase the dose to the effect that I'm looking for. But very commonly, I'll also add on something like gabapentin or clonidine, because neither of those increase serotonin in the brain. Yeah. And so that's sort of how I approach it. It's not that I say no trazodone. I use trazodone and fluoxetine or trazodone and clomipramine together. But we just have to be cautious about it. Yeah. Still trying to aim for labeled dose of the daily medication if we're using trazodone as our adjunctive. I think that because people might see that their dog might have tremors or potentially seizures, and then they think that their dog is having serotonin syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas true serotonin syndrome, I highly doubt that we're seeing it at the labeled doses that we're doing.
Yeah.
No, I think that there's probably tremors can be a side effect. Is there an underlying brain condition? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of our medications lower the seizure threshold. And so even if your dog hasn't been diagnosed with epilepsy, if we lower that seizure threshold, do they then have a seizure because of the lowering the seizure threshold, and they already had something in their brain that was contributing to that?
Like an underlying disease that was just undiagnosed.
Undiagnosed and then masked, and then we give the medication and it unmasks this.
Yeah. but not to scare our listeners or people thinking of using it. When even with dogs that we even know that have epilepsy, we know that the stress itself can be a cause for seizures. And many times a part of the treatment will actually also treat the anxiety with those anti-anxiety medications, with SSRIs that, you know, technically can, as you mentioned, reduce the seizure threshold, but because they treat the anxiety, they actually do just the opposite. They reduce the frequency of seizures. And that's why even in cases that were diagnosed with epilepsy, again, I would probably start using lower doses than what I usually use, but I will still treat them with the medications that potentially can cause this threshold changes.
Yeah. So if they can identify that over arousal or hypervigilance contributes to a seizure, then I absolutely put them on an SSRI. I don't have any problems doing that. I know there's a lot of veterinarians and a lot of the general practitioners that are sending us behavior cases that are more complicated. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the level of comfort of that veterinarian. Now, I know we just went on a huge like tangent about, I mean, really, we were talking about the side effects of these medications, because I think that I would say that it can be hard when you're a general practitioner to give all of the information that you need to give to that client. You're like, I know that this dog has anxiety, but I really don't have like half an hour to talk about all the side effects that come with that. I mean, there's little handouts, but then you have to expect the client to read the handouts. So that they do. But in this day and age, who's reading anything anymore?
Yeah, exactly. If you put it on TikTok,
they're listening to podcasts. Yeah,
exactly. Like on the web. Here, we're helping everyone. If you want us to make like separate episodes on the different medication, like an episode on fluoxetine and an episode on paroxetine, clomipramine, and trazodone, like separate episodes, and we can discuss the mechanism, we can discuss the side effects. When
it's really, really good for studying for boards.
Exactly. Now that's good for us. That's good for you. Just let us know if you want. We're gonna do it.
Be a little
but
bit
I think that's it for today, right?
Yeah, I think so.
As always, if you have any interesting topic or if you want to ask us something, that we didn't answer, or you want us to clarify things, feel free to write us and we'll try and address it as soon as possible.
Sounds good. We'll see you soon.
Bye, everyone.